Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Darren Bresnitz.
I'm your other host, Greg Bresnitz.
We are coming to you live from Florence, where I think we will be currently flying back or landing as the show rolls out.
Something along those lines. So, I'll be back. You'll still be heading to LA.
We are full of focaccia and pasta, limoncello, not by choice.
Tons of limoncello.
And Amaro runs through our blood. We have a very special show today. We're celebrating Portland with the upcoming Feast Festival. Shout out to Mike Thielen with a special guest of Han Oak.
Peter Chow, who made it from Oregon by way of South Korea to New York and back to Oregon to open up this incredible, one-of-a-kind, unique, family-centric restaurant that had the most kids and babies and pregnant people I've ever seen in one restaurant at one setting at one time.
Outside of Park Slope.
Outside of Park Slope. We talk about unlearning his lessons from New York, what it means to be a true family man, and all the tastiness that goes into his new spot that is a must hit when you go to Portland next.
And we dig into the archives for one of our favorite performances from Oberhofer, who's an early friend of the Tunes. He's going to be playing some songs, talking about his album, and I know he's got some new music in the work, which I know we can't wait to hear, and we'll definitely have him back on the show. For a third time? Fourth time?
Third time.
So here we go. Without further ado, Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. Look for their newest line, Pristine, the only complete line of pet food made with responsibly sourced ingredients. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music. With musical dudes, finger on the pulse, Snacky Tunes.
And I'll just keep on stumbling. Right now it feels too humbling to tell you what I want. And the city's feeling queer and crass, with beer cans growing blades of grass to look like something new. Whoa, oh, 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 whoa, oh, 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 oh. You love me, but I'm just too damn hungry for loving that I don't need. And I know that you like my shoes, but you wish you could count for every inch and every ounce of everything that you meet. And you'll die by the time you're 30. Slytherin snakes and garden rakes don't got what it takes to give you what you need.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
And welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Greg Bresnitz, recording live from the backyard of Portland, Oregon, inside Hanok.
That's right.
With chef, owner, housemate, roommate, father, Peter Chadwick.
Plumber, electrician.
I have to say, when we ate here on Monday, it was the most babies and pregnant people that I've ever seen collectively in one spot.
Yeah, no, we're pretty kid friendly. It helps that Elliot runs around and there's.
It was kind of amazing.
Toys. Yeah, all his toys in the corner, and yeah, it's pretty.
I definitely saw some kid getting dressed up in a Spider-Man costume that was like not for him and for all the parents. They put the mask on. He started crying. They're like, "What? You look great." And he's like, "Days off me."
Yeah, I feel bad though sometimes because Elliot, he's possessive with his toys, so they'll fight.
He'll learn.
Yeah,
he'll learn to share.
He needs to. Yeah, he's got a two-month-old baby brother.
So let's go back.
Yeah.
Born in
Seoul, South Korea. Grew up a little bit, spent some time in Jeju-do, which is a little island off the southern coast. But yeah, I moved to Springfield, Oregon when I was 7.
How did your parents choose Springfield, Oregon out of all places?
Yeah, no, it was my dad's aunt who married a soldier. American, and he was from Eugene, and so they moved back, and pretty much the rest of the family followed. So my dad's entire dad's side of the family is here in States, while my mom's side is pretty much all in Korea still.
I mean, Eugene is a pretty magical place. I went to school there. I fell in love with it, like we talked about.
Really?
I went to University of Oregon.
No way.
Yeah, go Ducks.
Yeah, totally. That's awesome. And you spent time in Portland, too.
I spent time in Portland, but, like, it's a common myth that I lived in Portland, but reality, I've done that hour and 40 drive from Eugene to Portland, so many times, way more tired, fucked up than I should admit, on that, like, that last thing, listening to, like, at the drive-in and Mars Volta just trying to pinch myself awake the last 20 minutes outside of Eugene.
Yeah. That last 20 minutes is tough, though.
That last 20 minutes is, like, the worst. And everyone's so passed out in the backseat. What was it like growing up in Eugene and, you know, what was the family dynamic and what type of food did you eat growing up here?
I didn't eat well. Not compared to, you know, Portland or New York. Yeah, it's a lot of my mom's cooking for sure growing up. I grew up on junk food. I grew up on a lot of like fast food places like through high school.
It's interesting because like you think of Eugene as, or I think it was like a picturesque place, but it's kind of like an island and then it's surrounded by all the kind of highways and everything there. It's just like classic middle America encroach of just like chain foods and big box stores and just really kind of garbage.
But it's also so much about the university. It's such a college town. And it was sort of I was there at the beginning of like when the football program was taking
off. What year
were you
there?
98 to 2002.
That's when I got here. So I actually got to hear the last year that they were good.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is amazing. Everyone's in such a good mood. And then the next 3 years, everyone was just so miserable all the time.
How well the Blazers or the Ducks are doing kind of determines everybody's mood.
I lived with someone that was in the marching band and two lifelong fans, and I was afraid to go home when they won, and I was afraid to go home when they lost.
Yeah.
Like, either way, I had to actually move out and go live with people that were not sports fans because it was such, like, a terrible dynamic during basketball and football season.
Yeah, you know, I can't even keep up. I can't even keep up, really.
So what brought you to New York?
So I finished school. My brother, who's 2 years older than me, got accepted to Teach for America. And they basically, what you do is you pick three cities that you want to be placed in, and you pick three, and New York was one of them. So he moved out there, and I followed. He gave me free rent for the first, 2 years probably I was there. So that was a pretty sweet deal.
And when did you decide to enroll in culinary school, or almost enroll in culinary school?
Yeah, no. So 2 years. The first 2 years, I was still trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life, and I didn't really pursue cooking in any way until I started living in that community house. So I moved in with my brother. He lived in a 4-story brownstone with 7 other roommates. And they would all take turns cooking for a Sunday dinner. So that's kind of how I got into cooking. I think, like, I don't know, you cook for yourself or for somebody else, that's pretty easy, but like cooking for like 9 people, it's, you have to menu plan and you have to like actually buy the right amount of product and all that stuff. So,
and was that part of the rules of being within the house that like everyone had to rotate through?
Yeah.
Do you remember like what were some of the highlight dishes that they made and that you made during that time?
Oh man, I can't even remember. I did like kimbap and tonkatsu once, just like fried pork cutlets and kimbap, a little Korean style, like rolls.
Was there a meal that you made where you're like, oh, I think like I can probably do bigger than just cooking for these 9 people? Or was there like a moment, like a watershed moment of when you thought, maybe I want to do this a bit more professionally?
Yeah, no, you know, I didn't really know much about like cooking in professional kitchens or even like any of, you know, any of the top restaurants in New York. There wasn't one moment, but it was just cooking and getting into it. And then it was really my roommate who knew a little bit more and was more of a foodie. And so he was, you know, he would tell me, oh, well, why don't you try and go work at a restaurant or something, or enroll in culinary school. And that's when I started studying more about it. But yeah, I definitely was like this close to going into culinary school before I kind of...
stumbled into the spotted pig.
Yeah, I fell ass backwards into the pig, yeah.
So how did you meet April and your mentor, and how did you get on your path?
Well, so, yeah, I had a friend in the neighborhood of the spotted pig, and so I just happened to walk by it and walked in, because it was a friend who was like, oh, you should just, like, go see if you can get a job somewhere, and just tell him you can start from the bottom. I was ready to wash dishes, because I was either going to do that or paid $30,000 to go to FCI. And so, yeah, I just like kind of popped in and I had this conversation with her, which was like, I don't have any experience. I think I could do this. If you have a job for me, great.
I cook for nine guys every Sunday.
I don't think I ever mentioned that. but she took me on. And
what was the first role you had there?
Yeah, I was the commie. I was like the kitchen. Like I did all the. It was actually the dishwasher loved me the most, because it was like I would do all the things that he would have to do. So his job was to go downstairs and grab trays of burgers and like plow through the busy dining room of the spotted pig and go down the basement stairs to go to the walk-in in the back and carry up like, you know, big 5-gallon quarts of, you know, shoestring fries and water and sheet trays of burgers. And yeah, that was my job for the first like year or first like month or two. And then they closed. There was a second floor remodel. I don't know if you remember that. So they closed for like 2-3 months. I went back to working an odd job, and then she called me back and said, hey, we actually have a position, because not everybody made it back off of the break. So.
And when did you begin to go from just, you know, entry level, you know, you were just another face there, to really work under April, begin to study under her? And how did that relationship change over years, or what was it that made it endure?
I mean, it was from the beginning, really, because they had, so after the remodel, the reopening, they April had, I don't know, 3 or 4 cooks come back, but she basically had to restaff the whole restaurant. So, you know, I was just thrown in there, and I think, you know, just from the very beginning, there's not a lot of people. and so I was just a part of it. But yeah, I think there was definitely moments when I got to take a step up, and, you know, somebody would move on and I would get to work the next station. But it was when, she went on Iron Chef, and, she took 2 sous chefs to sort of practice and train, really, for the show, which left, the sous chefs, Nate and I and Josh, to sort of run the show while they were upstairs on the third floor practicing for it. So that's kind of when I feel like we all sort of got to take that next step up and take on a lot of the sous chef responsibilities. And
I know you went to the Breslin with her, and that story is well known, but working under someone for almost 10 years and someone like that, like, what were some of the lessons that you feel April imparted on you that you also try to impart on the people that come and work under you now?
Oh, man. There's a lot. I mean, I can't think of anything specific, really, because I run this place very differently. I think, you know, because the restaurant is in our home, I pretty much have to have this conversation with everybody that I hire that they're, you know, becoming part of the family, and it's not just a job, because when they walk in here, they're walking into our home. That's not something I, you know, it's hard because I think this is so different from the environment that I sort of did most of my training in New York, that, you know, I do it very differently. I think maybe it's just the opposite of what you know, I sort of trained or learned how to run a restaurant.
And was it difficult when you came back here, because your mom got sick and you came back home to spend more time with the family?
Yeah.
Was it difficult to kind of, I don't want to say unlearn, but do things in the opposite way? Or, like, what was the transition from going, like, in New York, Breslin, Michelin star, April, to coming back here and rethinking it, reimagining, or what was the process, or what did you have to do mentally to get into this mindset?
Yeah, definitely unlearning a lot. I think there's a lot of that sort of shedding of the things that you think about in just working in New York. I remember visiting often while I was still working at the Breslin, and, you know, I would come and visit, and I would see restaurants that are only open for dinner or, like, closed on Sundays and Mondays. And coming from the Breslin, that's, you know, 3 meal periods, 24-hour room service, you know, go, go, go. I was always just like, wow, you can actually do that? Like, you can take 2 days off a week? Like, that's pretty amazing.
Do your investors know that you're closed?
Yeah, totally. So it was definitely a totally different world that I felt like unlearning is, like, the perfect way to sort of describe it. I had to unlearn a lot of that.
And how did you find this place? I mean, it's hard to describe. I mean, your house is on the side, the kitchen's here. We're actually sitting in your almost open air prep.
Yeah,
prep
it's area. Like a side kitchen.
Yeah. Like, how did you find this place?
Well, so my wife found it. So, you know, actually I moved back, and the intent was to help take care of my mom, and you know, her treatment is still going very well. So I was really not trying to work in a restaurant or open a restaurant on my own.
Right, because those pop-ups.
Yeah, I was doing these pop-ups. It was totally fun. Chef buddy of mine, Johnny, and we just kind of ran around town just getting to know the community. I think it was an awesome way to meet all the chefs, and not even just the chefs, like a lot of the cooks and servers and bartenders in town. So that, you know, we were doing that before I even was considering opening the place. And that was really fun. But yeah, my wife found it. She found it on Craigslist.
So, as many stories begin. What was it before? Like, what? It's hard to imagine what this was.
Right. So, we are in the middle of a commercial sort of block. My landlord is a real estate developer in town, and he specializes in sort of unique spaces and sort of different layouts. And so when he built this place out, this is part of a development with the 2 retail spaces out front, the 4 micro restaurants in the side, and this was his residence. So him and his wife, 3 kids, all lived here while all that was being done. So and then he lived here for, I don't know, a year and a half or so, and moved out and rented it to some people, and they, you know, turned it into like a party pad. And then he put it on Craigslist, and I tell this story in a funny way. It was like a dark and stormy night, and Elliot was 4 months old. My wife was at home by herself while I was doing the Stray Dogs pop-ups. And, you know, it was windy, and like it was an old rickety house, so like the whole thing was shaking, and the screen door was flapping in the wind, and she was like, fuck this, I'm finding another place. Like, we're gonna get a condo in the Pearl or something. Like, a nicer place in this shithole. And so she, like, goes on Craigslist and can't find anything in our budget. And so, you know, she just, like, slides the bar No, like four times our budget.
She just slid over to Pipe Dream.
Yeah, she's like, oh, that's where all the nice places are. And so she like found this, and you know, it was definitely out of our budget, but she was like, we have to go look at it. She like dragged me by my heels and like my ear, my hair, whatever, however you drag people. And yeah, we sort of, I don't know how you felt when you walked in the doors and sort of had this feeling of discovery, this like private courtyard.
Oh, it's like, I know we're in Portland, but it feels like a total New York thing. You're like, yeah. What's behind this door?
Yeah.
Just this magical place, yeah. This like secret garden. It's almost like Rochelle's Canteen. And,
yes.
And totally. You're like, what's behind this door? The yeah. best place ever.
Yeah.
Where you just want to hang out all day. Totally. And it totally has that vibe.
Yeah. And so we definitely try to extend that vibe. I want it to feel like you're just coming over to somebody's like backyard barbecue and just, yeah, welcome and fun.
We're going to take a quick musical break, and then we're going to talk about all things Hanok. We're going to talk about brunch, dumplings, noodles, all the babies that are here.
Yeah.
We are going to play a track from the archives, and we'll be right back here on Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
So the name Han Oak comes from a traditional Korean building structure.
Yeah.
What is it about almost like a common structure that you wanted to impose and invoke when you're talking about... It's spelled differently, but it's the same idea.
Yeah.
What did you want to invoke when people think about this place or what you're positioning in a Korean restaurant?
Well, I always describe it as... Or when I'm asked about Han Oak, I describe it as an untraditional Korean home.
Right.
So... But my mom came up with the name... and she found it fitting because it is our home and there's like these characteristics like the private courtyard in the front. I read that, you know, there's often a river, like how you position your home, often there's a river in the front and mountains in the back. But yeah, it's mainly because it's, yeah, it's our home and it made a lot of sense.
And just for everyone, I mean, working at the Breslin, you were two blocks from K-Town. I mean, there seems to be like 1,000 Korean restaurants in a one-block area. When you opened this place in 2016, what was the state of Korean food in Portland, or even like the larger Portland area?
Yeah, really non-existent. There's a couple of places that opened since, like way out in 82nd. We're on 24th. I mean, that doesn't seem very far, but... feel like there's like this mental barrier that people have to sort of,
it's
like crossing
the
river.
Yeah.
It's like,
it's funny how the map expands, like the smaller the city you get. I go to Palm Springs a lot and they're like uptown, midtown, and downtown. I was like,
yeah,
it's a mile and a half.
Yeah,
and people
yeah,
are like, oh, I never go uptown.
Yeah.
So it's
get nosebleeds.
Yeah.
Two blocks uptown.
So they've opened since then, but when you opened in 2016, was there, you know, for people who maybe have not had that much Korean food, did they have a reference point or did they have some preconceived notion of what this was supposed to be or not supposed to be?
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that out. Yeah, it's hard because I think, you know, having sort of worked two blocks away from K-Town for so long where I got to, you know, at the end of the nights, I would always go and get dinner at, you know, 1 a.m. because K-Town is open 24 hours. But also, like, it was a good way for me to sort of, I feel like Korean food is, like, a rediscovery in a way where I grew up in Springfield where there's no Korean food whatsoever. So when I moved to New York, it was a huge eye-opening experience. And then as I traveled to LA, that was like, you know, that's another level of Korean food I'd never had before. So
that's
it's
like
all,
a real Korean town.
Yeah, that's a real
Korean. Yeah, K-Town in New York, for those who listen there, it's like 32nd Street between 5th and Broadway.
Yeah, K-Block.
It's K-Block, but they call it K-Town, but K-Town in LA is massive.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I mean, it's the best Korean food that I know. So, yeah, it was a rediscovery for me. So, for me, like, what I wanted to do here in Portland was really introduce the things that I love about the K-Towns in LA and in New York and try and do my best version of that.
And do you feel that the things you took were maybe, like, the more intangible things? I mean, the food that I had here on Monday was not like any of the Korean town food that I... I mean, you could see it. Like, it visually looked like it. But then when I tasted it, it wasn't the same flavor profile that
yeah.
I was used to.
Yeah.
So, like, what did you keep that was, you know, what you took from New York and L.A.? And how have you run it through your own filter? Because no one here knows any better.
Right. Well, like, you wouldn't go to... you know, those restaurants, and they wouldn't be sourcing from the local farmer's market or, you know, better quality beef and pork. Like, I think that's kind of the biggest difference, and maybe people can see it or maybe they can't, but I think that's, you know, for me, that's how I, you know, sort of use my training and what I learned in New York and under April with my food here.
What's interesting, like, we had the short rib special on Monday, and generally when you get it at, you know, a K-Town restaurant, it's kind of stringy or kind of thin, and this was like everyone got to have a bite of the bone and everything was just so rich and flavorful.
Yeah.
You might be ruining Korean food for people who don't know any difference.
Well, I mean, I hope it's as close to what, you know, what they can get at my favorite Korean restaurants in LA or New York, but yeah, I mean, like, something like that, that's a whole short rib plate that I smoked for, you know, 15 hours before we, you know, slathered it with, like, a plum-flavored kaibi sauce. So it's, yeah, it's not exactly the same. I use different cooking techniques, but, I think it's what I want to eat and how I want to eat it, so.
You mentioned when you came here that, you know, people could be closed 2 days of the week, and actually when I walked in here, I was behind people who thought you were open, but you just left the door open for me.
Yeah.
How were you able to find the balance, especially that, you know, Friday and Saturday is your prefix menu, Monday is your noodles and dumplings night, you also do some brunch stuff, like, how were you able to find the right balance to be able to maintain the family and the work life?
Yeah. That's hard. Well, like I mentioned, I didn't want to open a restaurant when I moved here. So, you know, when we opened, it was just two nights a week. And that was enough because we lived here that was able to pay enough of the bills. And we didn't spend a whole bunch of money on build out, you know. So I think, you know, people think of this as a restaurant. And when I think of a restaurant should be open 7 days a week, and it should be open every, you know, day. And we're just not that. And maybe it's just different here in Portland, because I think, you know, it's, while there is such a booming food scene, it is still very small. I think there's not a lot of people are going out to eat every day of the week. But so finding a balance is more about, like, it shifts, you know, like I try and spend a lot of time with the family, or I do it in chunks, you know, so it's, you know, it's hard. I'm still trying to figure it out.
And
but yeah, you know, the addition of the dumpling and noodle nights, that's kind of what has pushed, at least in the last 6 months, us into being more of a, you know, being open more and identifying ourselves more as a restaurant. I try not to call ourselves a restaurant as much as
possible. What would you qualify it
as? I don't
know,
man.
Just a spot. Just a spot.
You're coming over to my house having dinner. Yeah. You just have to pay for it, but like,
I'll cook for you and your friends.
Yeah.
There's just a nice bill at the end.
Yeah.
Wine
totally.
Is extra.
Wine.
And how did the prefix is pretty obvious, but like, how did the noodles and dumpling night evolve, and where did that come from? And how did you, I mean, the dishes are incredible on top of, there's some overlap, but how did that evolve out of the prefix menu?
Yeah. So, I started Dumpling and Noodle Nights in January. So we had done brunch. So last summer into the winter, we were doing a very short brunch. I was doing Friday, Saturday night service and a very short brunch on Sunday. And that was all we were doing.
Must be nice.
Yeah, it was a dream. But, you know, brunch, when, you know, when the weather turns, like the space, the magic of the space kind of goes away. And I think I didn't want to wake up early. So I stopped brunch, but that just meant that we needed to add something else. And as I talked to my staff at the time about it, you know, we just were like, what do you want to eat? And dumpling and noodles is kind of what, you know, what I want to eat. And so we created a quick menu out of that, added our fried chicken to it, and it's been off to the races.
And do you feel that people in Portland, because it is so small, but it's such a well-known dining scene, that they're really receptive to it, that they pick up on it? Do you still feel that, you know, you mentioned that it's a hard sell in, like, defining Korean food, but do you feel that people are open to it, or that there's at least a core base that's willing to be evangelist for it?
Yes. The core base, and I think that it's helpful that we, you know, started on a Sunday and Monday night, which is very industry-friendly. I think that's helped a lot. I think, you know, when we have a lot of servers and cooks or bartenders that come and enjoy their meal here, they'll be at their workplace, and, you know, people visiting in town will be like, where do you like to go? And they'll, you know, give us a shout out. So that's I think what has helped us get to where we are now. Obviously I hope the food is good and people enjoy themselves, but yeah, that's, I feel like that's how we've gotten here.
And then last question, as it continues to evolve, you swapped out brunch, added dumpling noodle night, and the work-life balance, do you see an evolution of the food as you find more areas of create to explore, or do you think, like, this is the balance and this is what works for this home restaurant commissary type of thing, or where do you see the future lying in this, or the dream of taking it?
Yeah, I mean, I never imagined I'd be here doing what we're doing now, so as much as I'd like to be able to say I know what I'm going to be doing in the future, I really just, like, it's all a gut instinct. It's all by, like, who, you know, it's all determined by the staff. I think I have a really good staff who are interested in taking in a different direction. So, I think it just won't be the same. I can tell you that. I think the future is unknown, and I'm happy with that because there's no way to know what this place is going to be.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, Chef, thank you for inviting us to your house.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Where can people find you? How can they get in, eat the food?
Yeah. No, so hanokpdx.com is where you can find all the info. That's our website. But most of our updates happen on Instagram, which is still not very often.
Who has the Instagram responsibility in the family?
Son. And we have some friends who are managing it. But I'll post sometimes. Most of the kid photos are me.
Like, for every 10 posts, you get, like, a plate of dumplings.
Yeah, totally.
And if you do 20, you get a piece of fried chicken.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much. We're going to play another song from our archives, and then we'll be back with the second part of Snacky Tunes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We used to make noise. We used to make noise when we tied. But now we're silent to the high. Yeah, yeah. You like to tie me. You like to tie me up at night. Are you a stranger to the light? Yeah, yeah, we have a day to stay. Oh, 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 we have a day to stay. Upstate. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
My love for you.
Yeah, yeah.
My love for you is strong, my dear. Like lions, tigers, jungle fear. Yeah, yeah, we have a day to stay. Oh, 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 we have a day to stay. Upstate, upstate. Yeah, yeah. I'll feed you remedies. Quiet in the garden, gin soaked and near broke. Dry twigs into your hands, I keep your arms and your mouth for me. I give you nothing that you need. Baby, we agree. Do we agree? We have a day to stay. Whoa, whoa. Upstate.
This episode is brought to you by Castor and Pollux, maker of America's number one organic pet food, Organix. You put a lot of care and thought into what you eat. After all, you're a food radio listener. That thoughtfulness goes hand in paw with how you feed your pets. Purposeful pet food doesn't happen by accident. Castor and Pollux scours the earth to carefully select the best organic and responsibly sourced ingredients. New Pristine from Castor and Pollux is the only complete line of pet food made with ingredients that are responsibly raised, caught, or grown. Feed your dog or cat the new standard, like grass-fed beef, wild-caught fish, and vegetables grown without synthetic fertilizers or chemical pesticides. Pristine from Castor and Pollux. Purposeful pet food. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org/pets.
Oberhofer.
Yo.
Welcome back.
Thanks, man.
In the break, he was regaling us some stories of motorcycle trickery, chicanery,
shenanigans.
That's what I'm looking for. Some shenanigans from their recent tour. How's everything been, man?
Everything's been great.
Every time I see you or hear about you, it's just bigger and better and things like that.
Well, I don't really know. Don't know about bigger or better, but I know everything's been good.
How'd the debut album go?
Great. Great, man.
What's the name of it?
Time Capsules 2.
What was Time Capsules 1?
Time Capsules 1 is just a different thing.
A whole different thing?
Yeah.
So the Oberhofer fans aren't missing out on anything if they don't have Time Capsule 1?
Oh, I don't think so.
So how's life on the road been?
It's been pretty wild, actually. I've been back in New York now for 6 days, and I've been able to, you know, look at the last 3.5 months of touring retrospectively and understand how wild it's been.
Now, as you were digging into this delicious Roberta's pizza, you were telling me to avoid all pizza in Europe?
I mean, yeah, I tried pizza maybe 3 times in Europe and never enjoyed it.
Even in Italy or a place like that?
We weren't in Italy, so I can't speak for Italy. I'm sure the pizza's all right in Italy.
I think once you have European pizza, you realize that pizza is a little bit more than just bread, sauce, and cheese.
Yeah, it's so much more. It's there's so much soul in pizza.
Yeah. Did you have any good meals?
Yeah, I had some extremely good meals.
Where did you give me one?
I don't know the name of this restaurant. We ate at in Paris, and I had two delicious meals in Paris. The dinner I had was like this. I had like this veal stew. No, it was lamb stew, and and poached pear for dessert.
Ooh.
And what else? What else did we have?
Poached pears are delicious.
Yeah. Oh, I had some delicious swordfish in Lisbon.
Oh, man. That's where the shenanigans for the motorcycle. Do you want to tell that story real quickly?
Oh, man. So we'd been riding around, and we had to pull over because our tour manager had to make a stop. He did a bad job parking his bike, so he went around the corner, and his bike fell over with the engine running, and he didn't remember leaving the engine on, so of course he tries to pick up the motorcycle from the front with his left hand on the throttle of the bike, and causes the motorcycle to accelerate almost into him, but out of defense it just kind of like accelerated upward, and it was about 3 or 4 feet in the air, and his only reflex was to throw it to his side, and it landed directly on a parked smart car.
Unbelievable. And you left a note, right?
Yeah, left a note.
In what do they speak there? What's it, Spanish?
Portuguese.
And how's your Portuguese for I'm sorry I wrecked your car with a motorcycle?
Oh, man, we were only there for a couple of days. We didn't know any Portuguese.
All right, well, let's hear a song. What are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play House.
Awesome. Well, here is Oberhofer live on Snacky Tune. Take it away.
All right. A house with you, a house with you, a house with you, a home, so we can be alone. And I've been running, I've been hiding, I've been falling down and climbing back up where they think they belong. I know that you wouldn't try to tell me what you don't.
house with you. I wanna build a house with you so we can be alone. So we can be alone. I've been slipping on my shoes, my tongue is swole, my lips are bruised, and I can't get up the hill. I've been jumping through some leaves and chopping down some cherry trees, so I, oh, so I can tell, so I can tell the truth. Can be alone.
Burner, man, that's an epic one.
Oh, thanks, man.
Big fan.
Woo.
So I have to ask, what was it like playing the in-between spot between Linkin Park and Smashing Pumpkins in Lisbon?
Oh man,
a lot of crossover there.
Oh yeah, that was pretty wild. Yeah, the lineup that day was Limp Bizkit, The Offspring, Linkin Park, and the Smashing Pumpkins. And I mean, I saw 60,000 people singing along to Linkin Park. Just like 60,000 Portuguese people like running around, just going wild.
Just going wild for the park?
It's going so wild for something that just seems like so far in the distant past, you know?
Yeah, I mean, because they're really... I guess Smashing Pumpkins are even further back than Linkin Park, right?
Yeah, but they've sort of had a resurgence. I mean, their sound isn't so era specific, you know, like Linkin Park is like post Limp Bizkit, like totally had its own time, you know what I mean? And I mean, it was just really wild.
I'll still hear a couple of old school Smashing Pumpkins track and just still love, like, tonight anything.
Yeah,
you know, off the first few albums, or, you know, they always drop Gish a little bit. You gotta
That's actually the first riff I ever learned how to play on guitar.
Amazing. The first time I ever saw a man cross-dress was in that video.
Really?
It's James Iha. I mean, it was like sixth grade, yeah. Suburbs of Ballykinwood, you know, which is outside of Philadelphia. And, you know, guy yeah. wearing a dress was the farthest thing I'd ever thought of. And I was like, is that a guy? It's a girl. You know, blew my mind. What, yeah. Buzzbin back in the day?
What?
Buzzbin, remember those? Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, the old MTV, like, Buzzbin type of stuff? All right, we got... Thank you, Eliza, for coming in and not making me sound like a crazy guy. Buzzbin was, like, the 90s, like, Smashing Pumpkins, Radiohead, Cranberries, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Do yourself a favor. Get, like, the Buzzbin compilation.
All right.
Mwah. Good music for Saturday night. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, play that in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, you're going to Bonnaroo this weekend.
Yeah, man.
Big fan?
Of what?
Bonnaroo?
I mean, I think so. I've never been, so I can't really say. You know, we're playing for the first time there, so it's going to be cool.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but good things. I think it's their 10th year, if I remember correctly.
Well, then it's going to be a big one.
So what's your approach to festivals when you're playing them? Are you like, get there, go all in, or do you sort of like chill until you have to play?
Oh, man, I'm kind of all in all the time in general. So, I mean... I kind of just, I don't know, show up and do whatever, you know, whatever I have to do. You know, usually when you get to festivals, you're just busy from the get-go. It's like, oh, you have to meet this person here, you have to meet this person here, you have to, like, go home early because you have to get up at 8:30 in the morning to go load in, and then you sound check, and then you have to go somewhere else, and then...
Do you find you get to hang out with, like, a lot of other band buddies since it's the summer, and, you know, I feel like, especially, I know you're going back to Europe, like, a lot of the same bands move in the same... east to west direction.
Oh, yeah. We were in London. We ran into three random friends from bands on the same street in London by coincidence.
They were just all in town gigging?
Just all in town. Dave from Japan Droids and Johnny from Yuck and Lewis, who was engineering for a band called Asobi Seksu that we were on tour with a while ago, and ran into them all randomly. We all just ended up hanging out. It was really fun.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I love the New Japan Droids record.
Yeah? I haven't heard the New Japan Droids record yet. I've been out of town, so...
It's awesome.
Okay, I have to check it out.
It's up there.
I heard lyrically it's really up there, too.
It's one of the bands that brings me back to those suburban days of, like, listening to albums in my bedroom and on a Walkman and things like that. It's just, like, all their stuff. But this one is... It's awesome. If it's not one of the biggest albums of the summer, I'll be surprised.
I've got to check it out.
You got to check it out.
That sounds awesome.
Why don't we check out another song?
All right. Check out another song. Okay.
Here we go again. Oberhofer live on Snacky Tunes.
All right. I'm trying to decide which song. Okay. I'll admit I'm feeling a little cold. I wish I could change what I can't control. I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't ever want you to leave, cause that would be too sad for me, I don't want you to go, oh, 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 girl, I know how you feel. It's been a long time coming, but I've been running far, 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 far from the truth. I never felt it before, oh, oh, but this broken heart really stings. I don't got any rights or rings, but I could be your everything. I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 I don't ever want you to leave, cause that would be too sad for me. I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 oh. And I was running around, didn't really have anywhere to be. I had no idea where I was going, but I knew I was going somewhere. And so I ran to your house, and I knocked on the door, and I looked in your eyes and wished that I could see more. I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go, oh, 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 I don't want you to go, oh, 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 oh. I don't ever want you to leave,
cause that would be too sad for me. I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 oh. I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 oh. I don't ever want you to leave, cause that would be too sad for me. I don't want you to go. Oh, 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 oh.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Amazing.
Thanks.
So I have to say that your live show is also one of my favorite live shows. I think the first time I saw you as a four-piece was back at the Noisy Festival in Austin.
Yeah.
And but you guys didn't... I heard that Matt got hurt or was in the hospital for a little bit.
Yeah, for
but,
a little while.
For a little bit. And you guys played as a three-piece, but you're now back to a four-piece.
Yeah, we did... two shows as a three-piece.
But he's okay.
Yeah, he's totally all right.
Yeah? Awesome. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear it. You hear things through the grapevine, and you always want to make sure that everyone's okay. Life on the road's tough, man.
Yeah, it was crazy, actually. I was kind of nervous at first. When we played those two shows as a three-piece, but they turned out all right, and Matt was better after those, 3 days of rest, so.
Sometimes you got to just take a break.
Yeah.
Hang out, watch some The Wire on DVD,
Yeah, or Bad Santa.
Bad Santa. Yeah, that's good for the morale.
Yeah.
So I know you're already talking about the next album, and you got some big plans. Anything that you can share with us?
We're going to be working this record for a long time, just kind of like planning in advance for the next one pretty far, just so there's no time crunch at all, and like just so I can have like everything set and don't really have to worry about, getting it out on the right date, having it completely prepared months in advance before we actually have to release it, So we're going to work this record for a while. I still think there's a lot in this record that people haven't paid attention to yet,
What's the most exciting thing you are looking forward to share that has yet to be shared about the album?
Which one? This one or the next?
Well, we'll talk about the one right now since the next one is so far away.
Yeah, I think that this record, I've read a lot of reviews and I've heard a lot of people, tell me what they think about it and things like that. And I think, there's so much that's gone into it.
Yeah.
That there's no possible way that anybody that just bought this record 2 months ago has like heard what everything there is to hear about it,
Oh, it's so tough, man.
Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, even when I think with restaurant reviews as well, it's tough. People come out for one meal.
Yeah.
They take one spin of a record and they just pass insane judgment.
Yeah.
And it's something that, I think two artists sitting in front of me, that's a whole lifetime that you've put into the most recent thing you put out.
Yeah. And sometimes it's wild judgment in a positive way. Sometimes it's wild judgment in a negative way, but you can't control it and you just have to respect that anyone feels anyway. And, just give things time and, if someone... if you give things time, people will, I think, eventually come around and like see good things if you are doing good things.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I think it feels good to feel good about the good reviews, and sometimes feel bad about the bad reviews. But then you got to realize you just got to sort of say in the middle, because if you're going to say that way, when people say something negatively, then you have to have the same feeling about the good thing as well, just to sort of keep yourself grounded. You know,
I mean, as an artist, I think it's your job not to deliberately give people what they want from you, but to give people what you want them to have.
Yeah. Interesting. Do you feel that way as a chef?
I do. I think, as long as you put in, you feel good about what you put out at the end of the night. I think I could sleep well. I mean, I know if I'm a little hesitant on something, then I know there's something I'm not doing right.
Yeah. It's always so interesting to think about food and music as an art form, because with music, you can just hit replay on the whole CD. With food, though, it's just totally decimated and destroyed at the end of a meal. And they got to come back for a whole new type of experience.
Hopefully they come back. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, from the reviews and from what the way the food looks like on the website and everything like that, I think they will come back again and again. But I want to thank you both for coming out. Oak is the restaurant. Steve, thank you so much. Oberhofer, thank you so much. What is all the nuts and bolts for if people want to find you online?
Well, we have a Facebook, and I just started a Bandcamp where I kind of like upload songs that I feel like that I feel like uploading. And different
cuts from the album?
I just posted, I've only posted one song so far. I made this 2 nights ago, but I'm going to start posting demos from the record.
Amazing. All right. So, www.okid14th.com. Thank you so much. Enjoy
your
rest of time in New York. Shout out to Eliza and to also Simon, which is Oberhofer's PR manager.
Yo, what's up, Simon? I hope you get back in the States soon.
Yeah. And shout out to all the PR people who help us with the show.
Shout out to Joe.
Yeah. Shout out to my Joe as well, who's my dog, to everybody.
Yeah, dog.
And check out tomorrow. We're going to be announcing, we got two big announcements from the Finger on the Pulse food and music events. Shout out to Jack and Joe, who did an awesome job of tracking down the guitar.
Whoop, whoop.
And heritageradionetwork.com. Go online, support the network, everything like that. You can take us out with one more song?
Yeah, I could do that.
All right. Thank you guys so much. Greg will be here next week. Hopefully, I will not be here. So he'll be holding down the shipping container fort. And always thank you to Roberto's for being the most awesome guys in the world. And we'll see you next week. Take it away.
1, 2, 3, go. And you fell down again. Oh, darling, let me pick you up. 'Cause you were right this time, last time, this time, last time, this time. You were right now, darling. Please tell me that you know. I've been throwing my arms and taking down some paper planes, 'cause they crash and they burn with ease. Oh, they crash and they burn down. Oh girl, if I don't pick up the phone, you can call the landline. Oh, the landline. Oh, the la 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 la. The landline. Oh, the landline. Let's go. And you've been rolling down the stairs like a tumbleweed in a twister in the desert where I won't go. I'm dying, why do you always tell me that I gotta leave? I'm gonna hang up the phone, I'm gonna get up and go, I'm gonna get up and go. Don't pick up the phone. Call the landline. Oh, the landline. Oh, the la 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 la. The landline. Oh, the landline. If I don't pick up the phone, call the landline. Oh, the landline. Oh, the la 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 la. The landline. Oh, the landline. Let's go.
Talk about food, we talk about music, with musical dudes, finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization
driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.